Okay, we'll get right into it. I don't think we need to have much primer on why we're gathered tonight. Everybody's totally aware. No matter whether you're raised in Chicago, you know about the issues of police violence and police brutality. And there's a big fight going on as to what's going to be ruled. How is it going to actually be overseen? How is the public going to be involved? Seriously, oversight, or is it going to be some mayoral appointed council? And I think basically, Northside Power has not taken a formal position yet. We're still learning more about what the options are. But we're, of course, very excited to hear about legislation that's been introduced, and we're going to hear about that later on in the program. Before we talk about the specifics of plans and steps forward, next steps forward, we're going to hear from some people who have some personal experiences about police violence, about brutality, and the need for police oversight. People that have professional and personal experience are going to share with us tonight. I would like to let each of them speak. Then we'll have a presentation from Frank Chapman about CPAC and the prominent legislation that is actually before City Council on improving police accountability.
So my name is Monica Cosby. I was incarcerated in 1995. I was arrested in 1995. I spent roughly 3 years in Cook County Jail, and I went to trial in 98 and was found guilty, and I went to prison. I went to IDOC. So even before that, I'm from Uptown, and half of my family is from Englewood. So if I wasn't in Uptown, I was out south on 76th and Union and out that way. So I know firsthand in my life from watching the police harass my father and my relatives to the things that have happened to me in my own life when I was arrested and the way that I was treated upon being arrested to everything else that I've witnessed in the police state, which is not just the Chicago police, but it's Illinois Department of Corrections and every other police agency, right? So the carceral state is one that's just got to go. It's got to radically change, or it's just got to go. So in the year before I got locked up, my life was kind of crazy. So I had my youngest daughter in August 1994. I got pregnant shortly after that, and I had a miscarriage. And I know I'm going to get judged for this by someone, but I got pregnant again right after that, and when I was a little over 5 months pregnant, I got jumped on and beat up and raped by 4 guys. Between all of these things, something in me broke. Like, I was broken in the most fundamental of ways, right? And so when I went to the hospital after I was raped and after I lost my baby was stillborn, I was just broken in the most fundamental way. Right, my heart was broken, my spirit was broken, and my mind was broken also. So for a long time after that, even when I got arrested and was in jail, I thought I heard that baby that I lost, I thought I heard that baby crying, I thought I heard her crying. And there were no resources available then, and there were more resources then than there are now, but there wasn't enough. Right? There wasn't enough. And because just as a woman, I think we're viewed differently. And it was taken as, you're going to be all right. This is just a baby. You have another baby. And so there was really no one, or there were no resources for me. And I was in such a state where I was not able to find those resources that were available because I was that broken. When I got arrested, first in the hospital when the police came, the assumption was that I had a fight with my kid's dad. And I was asked by the police, what did you do to make him so mad? So I didn't tell them what happened because something in me, I was blamed by them, and because the way women are viewed, we tend to get blamed for being abused and for the things that happen to us, and then we blame ourselves. So I didn't say anything. When I got arrested for the case that I went to prison on, and it was a domestic, right, the Chicago Police Department and the state was loath to see that. So we know what the law of accountability is, right? So one of the things that we're talking about now is accountability. So if you know something is bogus and wrong and messed up, trying not to cuss, I'm in church. If you know something is bogus and wrong and messed up, before, during, or after, you're held accountable for that action. That's actually a criminal law, right? You're held accountable for that, and you get the same amount or more of prison time as for that action. So, and I'm going to refer to this again later on because we're talking about police accountability. So I went to prison. I was sentenced to, ultimately I was sentenced to 40 years, and I had to do half. I did 20 years. I've been out for almost a year now. So because I was so mentally ill, I was not entirely able to aid in my own defense, right? And because domestics are not seen as domestic violence, they're just seen as just a crime, period, right? So the system is really ridiculously unmerciful, uncompassionate, and unwilling to look any deeper than what actually exists. So in terms of accountability, when we're talking about police accountability, we always hear a lot of times a few bad apples, but nobody says the whole saying, a few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. So in terms of accountability, when you have what few police that are decent, that I'm sure do, I haven't met any, but I'm sure that they do exist, right? But if these good officers are not holding bad officers accountable, then they're accountable for those bad actions, right? Does this make sense? So we have to find a way as any group on the fringes, as any people that have been marginalized and disenfranchised by their birth, by being born of a certain color or being born in a certain neighborhood or whatever it is, we have to hold them accountable. I do. I've been accountable for my own actions. I just went to prison for 20 years. And whether I did it or not is besides the point. I was accountable for my actions, for my failings, and the actions of others. And all I'm asking is that right now is that all of us, as anyone who cares about what justice really is to be accountable, because there comes a point when you know that something is not right and you say nothing and you do nothing, you're accountable for that. You're complicit in that. So for those good police officers that I'm sure do exist, they're accountable for all those bad, brutal ones. They're very accountable. And I understand, and I've seen this firsthand from being in the penitentiary. So while I was in the penitentiary, I've seen some really ugly things. I've spent some time in solitary confinement for a lot of reasons, and on paper it looks like I maybe have been a very bad person. But what happens in prison is, a lot of times, is you go to solitary confinement for writing grievances and maybe for winning those grievances. Or you go to solitary confinement because you said no to the sexual advance of a staff. And so what happens then is that your room's going to get shaken down by someone, by another staff, and invariably some contraband is going to get found, and you're going to go to SEG, or you'll get sent to SEG or solitary because you were insolent, which is defined in the rule book as anything that irks, irritates, or annoys the staff. Right, so there's all these ways where on paper it looks like you're a really, really bad person, when really what happened is that culture of abuse has taken over with the Chicago police and various DOCs, not just IDOC, but all over the nation, right? We have the highest incarceration rate in the United States of any nation on this earth. And this is something that's just, it has to radically change. People have to be accountable. They have to be held accountable, and so do our communities. Which means part of being held accountable is educating yourself about something, which is, I'm sure, why everyone is here, because people want to know, right? Oh, there's so much I want to say, and I have so little time. I'm sorry. I don't want to take this whole thing over. Everyone has to start being accountable for this, because of everyone that is snatched up by whatever police department, in this case the Chicago Police Department, and sent to prison, either because they confessed, and all confessions aren't necessarily a confession. Most of them are going to be coerced. So when I got arrested, I was pressured to inform on certain people in my neighborhood, and I absolutely would not. I absolutely would not. I was too broken to anyway. I couldn't function, but this is what I knew, that my children were going to be safe, and that was all that mattered. And I got a little roughed up in the police station, When I got arrested, I called my mom, and my mom came. She picked up my kids, and we came with an attorney. My dad and my attorney were in the back following us when I was in the police car. They followed us from police station to police station to police station. I got moved to 5 different police stations before I ever even made it to Belmont and Western, which I don't even know if there's a police station there anymore or not.
Yes.
Okay. So, and when I finally got to Belmont and Western, I stayed there for a few days before I got to Cook County Jail, right? But before I got to Belmont and Western, I was moved 5 different times so that I could not talk to my attorney. And at one point, and I can't even remember which police station this was in, I want to say it was on Foster, but I could hear him saying, I know my client is in this building. Where is she? Let me talk to my client. And I heard whatever police officer saying, we don't know who you're talking about.
Wow.
And then I got shuffled out a door and back in a police car and moved to another police station. This is how the Chicago police worked then. This is how they worked before then. And I'm fairly certain this is how they're working now, right? And this is why we are all here to talk about these things, because this is something we in our communities have known since ever. And we've always talked about it to each other. And we've talked about it here and there, but not too many people are listening. I think if there is a time to actually hold the police accountable and to hold the whole carceral system accountable, it's now, which is why I'm here, because I don't want to see the same things that have happened to me and so many of the people that I love and care about, and so many of the people that I love and care about, even though I don't know them. And it's still happening today, and it's got to stop. And this is why I'm here, and I'm glad to see so many people here.
Thank you, Monica Cosby.
Thank you for sharing your story.
I didn't know this.
Next, I'm going to introduce Mark Clements, who's going to share us another perspective also on the issue of the need for police accountability in Chicago and our jail system and our prisons. All of them wear a badge and claim they've got the power.
First of all, Chicago police tortures, which first started in the city of Chicago under John Burge, but under certain other techniques of torture by other police officers, and this stuff probably have been going on for probably since the existence of the Chicago Police Department. Well, being 16 years of age in 1981, I was taken to Area 3 Violent Crimes in the city of Chicago. I was being questioned in regards to an arson fire that killed 4 African American people. The fire had occurred on June the 17th. I was arrested June the 25th. I was informed basically nothing. I was chained to a ring that was attached to the police station wall. I was denied all access to a telephone. I was denied all contact to my parent. So police, they had a method in which they would use, and their method was, especially to juveniles, was to deprive them of their fundamental right, knowing that if they deprived them of their fundamental right, it made it very, very, very easy for them to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. I was shifted around to different interrogation rooms within the police station over the course of, I would say, maybe 15, 16 hours. Then I had an encounter with a detective by the name of John McCann. John McCann was a Caucasian detective that must have found it amusing to give me a new either name or middle name, and I was Nigger Boy. So, therefore, being placed inside of the interrogation room, and now this time you handcuff both hands, and now he asks you questions like, well, why would this person say that you committed this offense if you did not commit the offense? Well, I told the detective, well, if a James Robinson was claiming that I committed the crime, meaning we committed the crime, then I said, well, James must have committed the crime. Well, I think he took this as a smart aleck type of response. And I was hit in the chest. After being hit in the chest, then he gets a cheer. What I most remember about this cheer is that this cheer was a metal cheer, but it had a protector at the bottom portions of this cheer. And how this cheer was placed right up against my kneecaps, not understanding the technique that he had already in his mind. Well, I was beaten the arms, punched in the, you know, the upper arms, smacked, beat as I would ball into a fetal position. And then what they would do is they would grab your genitals and testicles and they would squeeze them. So after getting, at least going through this first encounter with this detective, I did agree. I said, yeah, I'll cooperate. He let go, and he told me that it would be a man that would come inside the interrogation room, and he wanted me to talk to him. Well, the man did come inside the interrogation room. He was a Caucasian prosecutor, and he made it quite clear that he represented the people. So, you know, being young and naive, I looked at my own self and said, well, I am a person. So I did tell him, I explained to him that my mother had never been contacted, that no youth officer had never, at least I had never been placed in the custody of a youth officer, and that I had just been basically left at the police station and beat up by the police. Well, what he did do, he began to pack his belongings all over again. He put all of his belongings, and he left. Well, I could see him from a corner of the door that was left open. And I could see him talking to these detectives, the same detective who had beat me up. Well, McCann came back about maybe 5-10 minutes later, and he slams the door. And then he locks it. And then he accuses me of either trying to get him fired or trying to get him in trouble with his boss. Well, we all know now today that his boss was a promoter of this type of conduct. And his boss was John Burge. Unfortunately, the big letdown in all of this, and, you know, just trying to stay within the time restraints, the biggest letdown is African-American people in this. The seriousness and the alarm has already sounded, where that we have over 200 African-American and Latinos that were taken down to police stations and beat in similar fashions, with at least several of them having a cattle prong stuck in their anus. So our court system, they listen to this evidence. They seen men that would walk in front of their courtrooms looking like mummies, and they made not one mention. The African-American community was used as a pawn. And when I say that it was used as a pawn, it happened in the African-American community, and the African-American community remained silent for a very, very, very long time. It allowed for their children to be victimized. It allowed for their husbands to be victimized. It allowed for people to be put inside of prisons who should never have been put inside of prisons. It allowed for now the problems with the budget to be in a uproar the way that it is within city government. That means that if I understand correctly, over $600 million in approximately 12 years spent by the city of Chicago. Now, from 2012 to 2016, another $268 million spent. This is taxpayer dollars. But the taxpayers, and to be honest with you, someone being a young kid spending 28 years of his life inside of a hellhole, I suspected to come back out to society and it would be enhanced. Well, I come back to a society that is full of pawns, that are full of schemers, and individuals that act like their legs and their mouths are broken. So what do we see? We see over 700 murders in the city of Chicago. I just left Washington, D.C. Just got back real late last night, really tired now. The key of it is those people don't care because many of us have exhibited ways that we don't care. How in the world, would we allow for a Donald Trump to enter into the White House? I don't know how many of you watched the documentary 13th, but it is a documentary that you all must see. It speaks of how the criminal justice system plotted and schemed and how it moved up the ladders. Guess what? To incarcerate your children. They use your mindset to say, yes, this is okay, through trickery, through false data, through a president that, or at least a former president, that now speaks before the NAACP and tells them, I know I did you wrong, but lifts not one finger, not a one, to repeal the law. If that's not Jim Crow, what is? So the bottom line of it is, we are in a society that many people are thinking in their head that they're on a vacation while people are being gunned down in the middle of the street. And may I kind of like warn you, not all of those murders are being done by so-called civilians. We have had shooting after shooting after shooting on expressways over the course of 3.5 years, and never have a suspect ever been caught. We got cameras all over the city of Chicago in which taxpayers are paying each and every year more than $50 million to upkeep. We better wake up. We have a Donald Trump. So there's a crime package to eliminate in the U.S. children from being sentenced to natural life. And it's the mindset of Democrats to sit here, or to at least have the nerves to think I'm that stupid. Oh, well, we have a bipartisan bill, and the bipartisan bill gonna pass. Man, when Donald Trump sees something that is in the best interest of these young children, and especially he's all in the media, lenses, condemning and saying that children should be put into prisons for the rest of their lives. So, in closing, what we got to understand is this. Until we get up, and I grew up in this community, sure did. Until we get up, we going to suffer. If you don't see slavery and Jim Crow, they got plots and plans and schemes right now to bring back the privatization of prisons. Right now, The stock markets dropped. It completely dropped when Donald Trump was elected into office. And when you woke up the next morning and looked at it, they said, oh, something went wrong. Private prisons jumped up. Because let me tell you, you're going to become to be a prisoner in your own house. That's what's going to end up happening. They came out with new device technology. And they saying, well, guess what? We don't have to no longer keep them in prison inside of the prison. We got some technology. We just put them in their own house. However it takes to ensure that they are made less and that they are made in a way that they are always ineffective, that's what's out. In closing, for real.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clements. Thank you, Mr. Clements. All of our panelists will be here for more questions and answers we got from, and I'll let him introduce himself. Mr. Antoine Clements.
Antoine Day.
Mr. Day.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Sorry for being late. I had to wrestle the traffic getting from the west side to the north side. I guess I don't know what the topic was, but I know it was about integrity. And accountability. Well, being a victim of police misconduct some years ago, I definitely understand what it is. But when you speak about integrity, integrity is something that you're born with. We can't teach that here. We can't share that with somebody if you really don't have it. But we can definitely give you directions on how to obtain some understanding of what integrity is. So our police force is designed to do just what it's doing. And our education system is also designed to do just what it's doing. It's a pipeline for prison. Prison is number one stock in America right now again. And it was told to me that the 1980s will reappear in 2017. So we must be focused in on what's actually going on. We're being taxed. We've been billed out of our cities, out of our homes and our apartments in the city of Chicago. We're constantly being told that we don't have enough police. But how many police do you buy? You continue to pay for it, and the job is still not getting done. So who do we hold accountable? Accountability starts at the top, and it rolls downhill. So our accountability began with us, with the community, holding people accountable, making them not be able to find an scapegoat. I served over 14 years in prison for lies and vices that the police did to me. I was wrongfully incarcerated, and they knew what they did was wrong. And I didn't expect for them to do what they did, but I understand the game is just what they want it to be because they write it, they design it, and they direct it. So until we become powerful in our communities, in our homes first and then in our communities, we're not going to be able to hold anybody accountable because we're accountable, number one, for allowing things like this to happen without saying anything, you know, without having a voice to compete with what's going on every day as far as political. Politicians have drained our community to where we basically want to run from here. You know, now we're paying garbage tax and we're paying the water taxes increase, we're paying the sugar tax on soda. So you're not to enjoy anything. Anything you look to enjoy is going to be taxed. Until, as a people, we stand up, we challenge this mayor, we challenge the people that don't believe that we deserve an opportunity to have a fair life, a fair shake. So integrity is something that basically taken away in the training course of how you handle people in the street. The understanding is we the law and they do what we say. You know, he spoke about Jim Crow. Jim Crow never left. Jim Crow has always been alive. They just changed what it looked like. The face of it has changed, but the activity remains the same. If none of you guys seen 13th, you really should see it because what it does is open the door for an immediately understanding of what's going on. It's taking place right now. It took place in the 1980s, you know, war on drugs, war on crime, and all this kind of nonsense. But they never had a war on a misunderstanding or a miseducation of everybody in this United States. So we talk about integrity. Integrity starts with us. When we stop standing for anything and falling for everything, people will recognize. See, now it's a power move. People are angry. Everybody's standing up and fighting, you know. Most of the guys were just out here on the corner selling drugs or using drugs and now beginning to arm themselves with understanding so they can come out and be a part of this battle because the war is going to be televised. every day that the news show our kids getting killed, people not being held accountable. Women being murdered, people not being held accountable. Police rode down a block just the other day. I was standing out and a man shot at a lady 3 times. She had a kid in the back seat of the car. I had the license plate, gave him the license plate. He didn't even want to take it because he didn't feel like doing the work. You know what I'm saying? He felt like this is just what happens in this community. But when you talk about integrity, where does it start? It starts at home. So we can't give them integrity. We can talk about it. We can help them try to understand what it looked like, you know, to us. But it's a training course that teach these people how to be heartless. My brother's a cop. I hear it in his voice, you know. My mother didn't raise him that way, but he got an understanding that you are them and I'm him, you know. So we have to stop that. So right now, my fight is, you know, is being a part of an organized movement to bring not just some type of pain, but understanding for those to come. Because when this batch is over, we have a brand new batch. But if they still learning the good old boy system, what are we doing? What are we doing? We need to change the system. We need to change the laws. And make some stuff happen for us in our community. I guess that's, I'd say that enough.
Thank you, Mr. Antoine Day, for joining us. Our final panelist to address tonight is a consultant. Tell us what he has to share.
It's hard coming speaking after the three people who we just heard from. I don't have those kinds of experiences. I have experiences from doing civil rights cases for really a long time. I started in 1972. I started doing prison cases, then I started doing police cases, and I've done a lot of different things. Let me just, I don't want to apologize for the police or say some of my best friends are police, but to keep it in perspective, one short story. A client who was an African-American woman killed her boyfriend, who was a bad guy who had been abusing her. When she got to the police station, she was in shock, and she remembers a cop, who was a white cop, coming up to her and telling her, "I remember you were in fear of your life when you shot him." And she kept saying that, and she ended up not going away for 20 years. And she went away for 60 days. So all cops aren't bad. Some cops are. Mr. Burge and his crew were evil, and they should have been caught a lot earlier. Some state's attorneys are evil. Things have changed a lot in the last 20 years. We now video record interrogations and murder cases, which eliminates a lot of the games. Judges still don't care that much, but at least it's there on video. Another really big change is that there's no more death penalty. People used to get killed or get close to getting killed when they were innocent. And that's really a horrible thing, and we don't have that in Illinois anymore. Police accountability, which I guess is the topic, is on the upswing a little bit with cell phones, with videos. Laquan McDonald, there were the videos in the car. There are cell phone videos of other cases. There's the case in Minnesota where the woman was streaming live on Facebook where the officer killed her husband. That's really bringing accountability, where it's no longer the cop's word against the civilian's word. There's the video. And it really is making a big difference in how these things get viewed. There also might be a change coming with the new state's attorney. There are lots of cases where judges say, "I'm finding you not guilty because the cop is lying." Those cops should be prosecuted when they lie. And maybe our new state's attorney will take an interest in doing that. Just a case in New York City where civil rights lawyer was very surprised that the new prosecutor there indicted a cop who lied at the trial. One of the things that nobody talks about anymore is discrimination in hiring. In the 80s, there was a really big push to get the police department and all of its ranks to be representative of the communities. And there were quota promotions. And Congress said, you can't have quota promotions, they're illegal. But we were going towards a representative proportion of minorities in the higher ranks of the police department, and nobody cares about that anymore. I think the success in that has disappeared. There's one of the other things that I hope is changing. That's my friend Arnold getting a phone call. Arnold is the reason that I'm here, by the way. He was a client, and he said, would you come talk? And I said, whatever you want, Arnold, I'll do it. Cops get punished and shunned for speaking up about stuff they see that's bad. There was a case which just got settled where the cops got $200,000 for being shunned when they came forward and talked about stuff. It's really hard to be a cop and come forward. That might be changing with the new police, whatever it's called, the new IPRA, but we have a long way to go. I think our mayor is politically committed to doing better than he has been. I think he likes his job, he wants to get reelected, and knows he ain't going to do it unless he produces something. So there's hope there. There's more hope there than there is in Washington, which runs the Department of Justice, which has been investigating the Chicago Police Department, and maybe they'll magically get their consent decree done before the new president takes over. If the new president has the power to say, we don't want any more consent decrees. So things are could be better, but they're not as bad as they were 20 years ago and more. There's still lots of cops who do bad things. There's supposed to be on Channel 7 today a news story caught on video of a cop who arrested somebody for no reason and said, we'll let you go if you tell us where there are some guns. And they got some guns, and this is all on videotape about how it's all bogus, and I hope that shed some light on that and maybe there'll be more exposure. But videoing is really the only thing that's going to set us free in this accountability business. And I encourage you all to carry your cell phones and take videos. Thank you.
Now it's our turn to hear from you. And I'm going to introduce Maren Bugande to lead that off.
So let me just start by saying I appreciate the stories, the perspectives, and sort of the experience that each of our panelists bring. And we appreciate that. But I want to kind of bring it back to, I think, the core and the intent that we had in putting this together is not because the fact is if we dilute the conversation of police accountability, then we really won't go at it the way we ought to. And we don't have answers here. We're going to talk and try to figure out those answers together. But I do want us to be sure that we are here to talk about police accountability. We have to hold the police to a higher standard. I know that there's a lot of mess in our community that we need to clean up. I've got a whole lot of mess in my own family I need to clean up. But I'm still not going to stand back and let that be the excuse for why the police, who are paid by our tax dollars, who are held to a higher standard, get away with the very thing that Monica could not get away with when she was fighting for her own life. Okay, so that's the whole point around police accountability. And I'm not to disrespect any of the panelists or anything that you said around integrity or around, you know, things are getting better, any of that. The fact of the matter is there may be more videos, Ken, but the fact is people are still not being indicted, even though they're seeing videos of somebody's foot on somebody's neck and killing somebody with the video right in their face, and they're still not being indicted. So we're here to talk about that. Okay, so we know that people in this room know the stories, right? And we know that the folks in this room, and how many of you have ever gotten in trouble for doing something wrong? You do something wrong, you're held accountable. That's what we're saying needs to happen with the police. This is not about anti-police. This is about holding folks accountable when they do something wrong. Amen. Amen. So there's a story, Stefan, you're about to walk out. But I want to know if there's a story that anybody might want to share about an incident with the police. A brief story. Anybody? You want to say something?
Yeah.
Okay, you got 1 minute.
1 minute. So I met Mr. Flaxman as a result of catching a case. It was an officer that wrote, he became a new community. In actuality, it was the entire plainclothes unit. I was rapping through the Inglewood community, and they was robbing, shooting, and just putting cases on people. And I was one of the individuals that didn't want to take it. They just wanted me to go to jail. So I ended up catching a case. He had told me prior to that that when I catch somebody with some drugs and you're around, I'm giving you a delivery. And that's what he did. And that wasn't the first time that he locked me up. He locked me up with somebody else, gave me the possession, and gave the other person a delivery. And it's the same thing that he did to me and my cousin. I sat in the county jail for 13 months. I refused to cop out. There was a lot of individuals that was from Inglewood where I was at. And I told everybody, nobody cop out. Everybody take your case to trial. I got out, contacted Mr. Flaxman, filed a lawsuit against the city. Won a lawsuit. A few other individuals won a lawsuit. The officer ended up trying about 5 kilos of cocaine. The DEA was outside of the car wash on 85th and Ashley when he went in, and they was listening. And they wanted to know who it was that wanted to buy him 5 kilos of cocaine. So when he came out, they took his license plate and they seen the Fraternal Order of Police sticker on the back of his truck and got a wiretap from a federal judge to tap his phone. The officer had been involved in shootings and gang shootings and things of that nature, right? So it does exist. It does exist. People are placed in jail for walking down the street, simply walking down the street. And there's no system around that. When I went to trial on my case, I was sitting in the courtroom and I was listening to the testimony of the other officer, the officer that was adamant about me going to jail, the ringleader, Broderick Jones. We used to call him Thursday. He was at the 311 call center for a shooting, a gang-involved shooting that he had drove somebody away from the scene. So the other officer was testifying, and I was smiling as he was testifying because I knew everything was fabricated that he was saying. And this is just how the system is. The system is so broken. The judge found me guilty and told my attorney, once I left the courtroom, to file a good motion when I came back from sentencing. When I came back from sentencing 30 days later, attorney came to back. He said, "You know why you was found guilty? The judge said you are able and you deserve to be in jail. You were smiling in the courtroom."
Right, don't smile.
He said, "You're going to go home tonight, but don't smile when you go in the courtroom."
The police and the criminal justice system.
And the criminal justice system are 100% crooked. And this is not nothing that I'm fabricating, because this is the attorney right here that filed the civil rights lawsuit for me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honor.
We have video out there, and still, we have people that have taken the video, and they're the ones that are going to jail. There's something wrong. The system is broken. So do not tell me that we're going in a different direction, because we're going back, especially this last election. So we have to figure out, what can we do? So the question is, what can we do?
What we're going to do, what can we do, is what's up next. Thank you very much. Frank Chapman is here today to share with us, Mr. Chapman, about what CPAC is and what it's doing.
We're having a boycott on November the 25th. I want to start off with you doing something. You know, if what you've heard here tonight upsets you, if you want to do something about it, I'm here to give you an opportunity to do something about it, other than just talk about it. Okay, I want to start off on that note, because Dr. King had an expression that I love. He called it the paralysis of analysis. If all you can do is talk about the problem, see, the problem is historically deep, because it's been going on ever since the United States has been in existence. So if all you're going to do is talk about the problem, you can talk about it stretching a period of almost 200 some odd years. Okay. We don't want to just talk about the problem. We want to do something about it. And we can do something about it. And we are doing something about it. Mark said a number of things that I found very moving. I'm going to just mention this real quickly. I was a political prisoner. I was locked up at the age of 19, given life in 50 years. And I came home 14 years after incarceration. I just came here back from New York this past weekend celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party with the Black Panthers. These are the people I was in jail with. We went to jail for political reasons. They framed up a lot of people for political reasons. My organization, the National Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, was founded by people who had been political prisoners and who had been thrown in jail because they had the courage to stand up and fight this corrupt, racist system. And some of us had been murdered, like Fred Hampton, for example, and Mark Clark. Okay. So when our organization started right here in the city of Chicago in 1973 at the Congress Hotel, one of the main things on our agenda when we were founded, because we were founded in the wake of the murder of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. So one of the main things on our agenda was police crimes. We didn't call it police misconduct. We called it police crimes. And we've been calling it police crimes ever since. That was 40 years ago, okay? Because when the police murder somebody, that's a crime. When they murdered Rakia Boyd, that was a crime. When they murdered Laquan McDonald, that was a crime. And I go on and on and on and on. When they murdered Fred Hampton, that was a crime. You see? So they have been committing these crimes for some time. And we have not been holding them accountable because we don't have no power to hold them accountable. See? Don't blame it on us totally. Because we don't have power, it's because we've been denied power. And when you've been denied power and you don't have no power, then you got to take power. And to take power, you got to have some guts. You ain't going to pray up on it. I know I'm in church. I'm not trying to say nothing bad about the church. But Dr. King didn't just pray. He didn't just pray. There are people that come out of church who are also revolutionaries. It's time to do something. I don't want to cry about Donald Trump getting elected. I want to fight about it. I want to fight about it. And that's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to stand up and fight. Because this is going to go on as long as we allow it to go on. You see, oppression stops when the oppressed draw that line in the sand and say, I'm not having this no more. And when I decide that I'm not going to have it anymore, then that means until death do us part. That's what that means. You may get my dead body, but you will never get my obedience again if I say we're not going to have this anymore. And we're at that point where we got to say that. So we're calling for an all-elected, all-civilian police accountability council. We got the information out there on the table. And we're fighting for the empowerment in our community where we have the power to hold the police accountable. We, the people, have the power to hold the police accountable for the crimes that they commit. Otherwise, nothing's going to happen. With the police investigating the police, with the prosecutor, nothing's going to happen. We got to have that power. And they're not going to give it to us. We got to fight for it. So we have a bill in the legislature right now called Civilian Police Accountability Council, record number 5707-02016. You can go online and look it up. That bill is going to die in committee if we don't fight for it. The aldermen are not going to fight for it. I'm sorry. They're not going to do it, you know. We got to do it. So that's why I'm coming back to what I said at first, and I'm going to end it. That's why we need you on November the 25th to come down to the Magic Mile, the Water Tower, 10 a.m. in the morning. We're going to close that area down. That's what we're going to do. Are they going to let us close it down? No, they're not going to have no welcome committee down there saying, come on and close it down. They're going to have a lot of police down there saying, no, you can't close it down. But it's more of us than it is them. It's going to be a peaceful demonstration, but we need to put thousands of people in the streets, because then we can close it down like we did last year. Remember? Okay. But we didn't quite close it down last year. We caused them a loss of over $500 million in profits last year. We can do more this year. This year, we can close it down and maybe cost them $1 billion. Now, then we'll start seeing some action. When they can't make profits off of our misery, then we'll start seeing some action. You know, I agree with everything everybody here said about, you know, the 13th Amendment and so forth and so on. Jim Crow ain't over. You know, we got a new Jim Crow and so forth and so on. But we also got to have a new fight back. We got to have a new fight back. And that's what we're inviting you to. Come on out.
Are there any questions for Mr. Chapman or any of our panelists?
Oh, I'm sorry.
The ordinance is on your website, right?
Yeah, it's on your website, yeah.
And
yeah.
The indicators, Alderman Carlos Rosa is one of the co-sponsors.
Here's how you can find out about the ordinance. StopPoliceCrimes.com, if you got a computer. StopPoliceCrimes.com talks about the ordinance, talks about our movement, talks about our organization, which his brother here wanted me to speak more on, and so forth and so on. Okay?
I definitely do.